Wednesday, April 25th, The Monty Show with you. As always, we are live on Periscope. Do you know what Periscope is? It's live streaming video on Twitter. You can watch us do the show every day, or of course, you just subscribe on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher. We're all over the place with The Monty Show, and of course, you can find us online, themontyshow.com. Watching LeBron struggle with the Pacers again tonight. We've got Jazz and Thunder tonight. We have got Kanye West for President of the United States of MAGA. We've got it all going on. But I do want to start with the NBA playoffs because this LeBron thing, I'm fascinated by the way he has evolved his narrative. And I don't know, Jake, if you saw this or not. This did not come up in the pre-show meeting. But LeBron James essentially said, I'm not worried about my teammates. I just want them to know I believe in them and they need to be ready.
Right. Yeah.
If you are Jose Calderon, if you are Kyle Korver, Kevin Love, what do you think when you hear that?
I don't think they worry about it because of where they're at in their career. I think they're veterans. They know what to expect. They know what they need to do. I think guys like Nance and Jordan Clarkson, and it may be George Hill, but George Hill's been around long enough to know what to do and what to expect. But primarily guys like Nance and Clarkson, younger guys, I think what that says to them is they need to stop worrying about what everybody else on the floor is doing and do their job. And because I think a lot of times in the playoffs with the Cavs, and we've seen this actually with the Warriors too, and other teams, they try to do too much.
Yes.
Let LeBron do his thing, and he will find you. And when you get comfortable in the game, when you find your way in the game, that's when the Cavs specifically will play at the highest level that they're capable of playing of. They're not going to play at a high level when guys like, you know, J.R. Smith are taking too many shots and forcing up bad threes.
Oh, absolutely right.
Things like that.
Yeah.
So I think LeBron isn't threatening his teammates or anything. I think he's just saying, focus on you, and I will find you. And I think that's a really good thing.
But I also think it's not every teammate of LeBron James that can handle that.
Yeah.
I think it's a very specific kind of teammate who can handle LeBron James saying, hey, look, I'm going to make you a better player, but you got to be that better player, which I find fascinating. By the way, Pacers up 39-36 early in the second quarter. So we'll keep an eye on that game. I think the far more compelling game tonight is Jazz and Thunder. I love what this series is. I love what this, I'm not going to say rivalry, but this budding rivalry and what it's become, I think it is quite pivotal to the success of the first round of the playoffs, which has really been good. I think this series, it's been heated. They clearly don't like each other. And frankly, I love that because I loved Jordan versus the Knicks and Reggie versus Spike Lee at the Garden. Like, I loved that style of playoff basketball.
Yeah, I mean, physical basketball is always fun to watch, but I think if you're the Jazz tonight, you need to win tonight. And I think that you need to win because you want to keep that confidence level high. You don't want to give OKC any kind of even glimpse of hope in this series because once you get a Russell Westbrook who believes that he can take over and really control a series, then
sure,
you're in trouble if you're the Jazz. So they need to win tonight.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it's really interesting that Russell Westbrook's legacy has, if they lose tonight, Russell Westbrook's legacy will be damaged. You know, and it's, you know, listen to my dogs are even fired up. They're watching Cavs and Pacers right now. And but I think Russell Westbrook's legacy is in question right now. I don't think it's a matter of is he a good player? Because everybody realizes that Russell Westbrook's a good player.
Yeah.
But I think what people struggle with is Russell Westbrook a championship player? And I think tonight goes a long way to defining that.
Yeah, I mean, I think good player is such a broad term. I think Russell Westbrook is, you know, arguably top five in the league, depending on who you are. He's for sure is top 10 in the league, no doubt about that. But, you know, elite is more the word I like to use. He's an elite player. Anybody on any team would take him, in my opinion, as a contributor on their team. But I think once you get to in the regular season, I think they would. I think, you know, any team would take him, but I think, you know, once you get into the postseason, once you're talking about playoff acumen, winning championships, things change. You know, you got to be a better leader. You got to be a better teammate. You got to be the guy to carry your team. And I don't think he knows how to do that.
I don't think I agree with you that anybody would take him. I think there's a lot of teams right now and a lot of guys around the league who don't want to play with him. And if Paul George bails on him, and if Paul George walks away from that franchise, and he's essentially stuck with Carmelo Anthony, and Anthony's making $28 million next year, they're not going to be good, and they're not going to win. And I think Russell Westbrook will become a problem. And I do believe that the Thunder will win tonight. I think they will ultimately lose this series because I don't see them going back to Salt Lake City and winning. But I think that they will lose tonight. I think they will win tonight. But I think the Jazz are going to win this series because the Jazz are just a better, more well-coached basketball team. Without even a question in my mind, I think the Jazz are better coached and they're better fundamentals and they're a better – they play a style of team basketball that Russell Westbrook just does not fathom.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem for me. So I think it's really interesting that the Jazz have made wholesale changes. You know, like watching the Cavs game right now. Rodney Hood is on the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, Gordon Hayward is a Boston Celtic. Whether he's playing or not is a different story. But he's a Boston Celtic. And they made wholesale changes to that roster and got better.
Yeah.
That is hard to fathom. George Hill is not there anymore. And they're better for it. That's hard to fathom. Man, here's my struggle in the NBA.
Yeah.
I look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's not a very good basketball team, honestly. That's LeBron James and six or seven other guys. LeBron's a really good basketball player. I look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I think that Paul George is a really good basketball player. He's on LeBron's level. But we'll never see that as long as he's on the floor with Russell Westbrook. If you look at James Harden makes guys better. His ability to create space makes guys better. They're good because Clint Capella is a better basketball player for playing with Chris Paul and James Harden.
Yeah.
That's the conversation that has to be had about Russell Westbrook. Why are the Jazz so good? Because they don't have a true number one player on that team. Donovan Mitchell's really good. He's the rookie of the year, in my opinion. But he is only as good as his teammates allow him to be. And I think that's very good for that organization. And if Russell Westbrook had that mentality, I think that the Oklahoma City Thunder would be an unstoppable force.
Yeah, I mean, Donovan Mitchell is... you're right. He's not a number one on their team right now, but that's because it's his first year in the league, and I think... with where they're at as a team mentally, they don't have room for a guy to be a number one. They have room for five guys on the floor to work together to win a game. And I think you're exactly right. Westbrook is a number one guy. He thinks he's the best. And that's why they struggle. And I think when he doesn't get the ball and he doesn't get those 10 points in the first quarter and doesn't get into the flow of the game, he really struggles.
And the other concern that I have watching this Cavs game right now, and this is what I said about the Jazz the other night, when they don't shoot the ball well, they really struggle. What was so impressive about that Jazz win the other night was that they did not shoot the ball well for a long stretch, and they won.
Yeah.
That's what made that Jazz win the other night so impressive. So it'll be interesting to see how the Cavs come out of this game. I just don't care about the Toronto series. It really is paint drying to me. I just hope it ends soon. You know, like that series is just not interesting to me.
Well, I mean, there's one every year, you know.
Do you find yourself interested in that series?
Not as interested as other series, but I still enjoy watching that series. I mean, I think the battle between DeRozan and Lowry, you know, versus Wall and Beal is totally a great, you know, it's a great battle within the series. And I think when I watch any kind of playoff sport, that's what I'm looking for, the game inside the game. And I think that's one of the best matchups.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I still maintain that right now the Houston Rockets are the best team in the NBA. But I'm telling you right now, this Golden State Pelicans series is going to be off the chain. Warriors Pelicans, I think I haven't looked forward to a second round series this much, and I can't remember when. I am really looking forward to that series. How concerned as a Warrior fan that you are, how concerned are you about the Pelicans?
Well, they're definitely dangerous. I'm concerned about the idea that, you know, they do have a number one in Anthony Davis and a bunch of other guys that play around him. And I think he he dominates for them, and the Warriors don't really have anybody who's going to stop him. So for me, the Warriors' mentality needs to be, okay, Anthony Davis can get his, but we got to stop the Jrue Holidays of the world. We got to stop all the other guys that contribute for them in order to win.
Yeah, I think there's a real good chance that the Pelicans win that series. I think that is going to be tight. My guess is if the Warriors can find a way to run a lot in that series and Steph plays, they win.
Yeah.
They've got to stay out of half-court basketball. Because I don't know how you limit the damage that AD's going to do. I don't know how you because you're never going to stop him. You need to limit it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this series, Golden State is not going to win by playing and stopping Anthony Davis. They're going to win by playing a better brand of basketball than the Pelicans, which is going to result in 120-plus points a game. If that, you know, comes true, I think they do win, but one thing to remember, the Pelicans are the fastest team in the NBA. They play at the fastest pace of play in the NBA. And I think if you're the Warriors, I think you need to try a couple of things. You need to try and slow them down and play half court and see how that goes. If Davis tears you up in the half court, okay, then we pick up the pace of the game and we run with them and just see how that goes. You know, that and that's what game one's about for me. If you're the Warriors, you need to figure out where the Pelicans are going to have success against you, and then, you know, adjust accordingly.
Yeah, everybody brings out that the Pelicans play the fastest style of basketball.
Yeah.
That's almost meaningless, by the way, just because the playoffs are different. You're playing it, execution is what counts in the playoffs. You can get up and down the floor, and you can score a ton of fast break points. I totally get that. You're not doing that against the Warriors. Because the Warriors, one, make far too many three-point shots. They make a lot of three-point shots. So it's very difficult to expect that you're going to do that against the Golden State Warriors. And I think if you're the Pelicans, you're smart here to feature Anthony Davis, well, because he's really good.
Yeah.
And the Warriors don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be JaVale McGee, but, I mean, that's not going to stop Anthony Davis, right? I mean,
yeah, they're going to have to double him on a regular basis. And Anthony's going to have to be a very good passer. And I don't know how you reconcile that if you are Steve Kerr. Because
yeah.
You're going to have to find a way. At some point, if you're going to win that series, my suspicion is that the Warriors will have to find a way to match Anthony Davis on the defensive end one-on-one. Somebody's going to have to not stop him, but make his life difficult.
Yeah.
And they don't have that guy.
I mean, I think you're describing Draymond Green in a sense. That's typically who fills that role for them. But I'm not saying that Draymond's capable of stopping Anthony Davis, but I think Draymond is capable of, you know, making his life difficult. I mean, that's pretty much what Draymond Green does. But I also think if you're the Warriors, you need to try to get Anthony Davis to guard outside on the arc with guys like Durant and Thompson. You need to get that switch and see if you can get him in foul trouble. I mean, that's one of the first things I would try to do.
I think if the stats to watch in that series, and I know what is today, Wednesday, I think that tips off Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
Turnovers in that series are going to be massive. Massive. And if you shoot a poor percentage, it's just that kind of day, isn't it? If you shoot a poor percentage, this is going to be interesting, by the way. My dogs are freaking out. Because the religious folks are at the door, and this never happens. Yeah, the religious folk are at the door. How about this? Amazing. Yeah, Jake, did you? Jake just turned him away. He's like, no, go away, go away. Awesome. Good job, Jake. Do you feel bad for doing that?
You know, it's one of those things where I just said, hey, look, guys. Can't do it right now.
Can't
have
do
a nice
it.
Day.
See you later.
Okay. Back to it now that we can actually have
The funny thing is about this, and
just do it. Get into it. Just get into it. Do it.
So if you listen to the show, you know we got robbed a week ago or whatever it was. We got robbed about a week ago. And when I say robbed, everything that was on our front porch got stolen. A guy pulled up in front of our house in the middle of the night, and he stole everything that was sitting on our porch. So we've had heightened awareness.
Yeah.
We're a new housing track. right? Like we're the only
development.
Yeah, there are only 10 houses in our track, but there's huge houses going up all around us. So we're kind of a magnet right now. So when somebody rings our doorbell, it's awkward because in this day and age, how many people really ring your doorbell? And
religious folk.
Yeah. And I believe those were Jehovah's Witness.
They were.
More power to you. It's 100 degrees out in Phoenix today. By the way, it's 98 degrees.
Just another day in the park, right?
You know. But my point is that it is awkward when somebody rings your doorbell.
Yeah.
Don't ring my doorbell. Right? Like, I really, is it, am I being a jerk if I say I don't want people coming to my door?
Well, listen, I think it used to be a thing where it was like, okay, it's not a problem. We don't think poorly of you because you're approaching on my property and I don't know who you are and you may look suspicious in your pickup truck. You know, but today, in today's day and age, that's no longer the case. I mean,
yeah.
I don't care what you look like. If it's dark out and you're in a pickup truck and you come suspiciously walking up to our front door, that's not... You know, that doesn't make me feel good. I'm not feeling a welcoming vibe there, you know?
And the funny thing is, and I never talk about my text messages on this show.
Yeah.
My wife is in Baltimore on business this week.
So we have Vivint.
We have Vivint.
Yeah.
It's smart home. We have Vivint. So she has the app on her phone. So she just texted me. She's like, bummer. she said the JWs came to the door while you're podcasting.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to do a show here, people. But I don't want people coming to my door. To react to all this on the fly, I don't want people coming to my door.
Yeah.
It is, maybe I'm just a jerk about it, but I don't.
Yeah.
I really don't. Speaking of being a jerk about it, find me online, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, TheMontyShow.com. I wrote about a huge article in the New York Times today that really, I mean, this is a big deal and a lot of people are talking about it. This is... The NFL and the NFLPA sitting down at a table last year and trying to figure out kneeling. And they had this meeting where the owners had a group of, you know, representation. Several owners, including Bob McNair from the Texans, were in the room. Bob Kraft from the Patriots. He had a bunch of players in the room. And Donald Trump was the center of conversation, according to the New York Times, who knows this, by the way, because there are tapes of those meetings.
Yeah, someone secretly recorded it.
And it was probably the players, but whatever. And the New York Times basically has Bob McNair defending Donald Trump, and you have got Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, saying that he's, you know, really bothered by Donald Trump, and you have Mr. Lurie from the Eagles saying he's disgusted by Donald Trump. And you have Eric Reed, the now can't find a job safety, who's all world. And really, if you were looking for a safety any other year, you would sign him. You have him in this meeting saying, hey, look, I feel like we hung Colin Kaepernick out to dry. We made an example out of him, and that's wrong.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. And the what this does is this brings into focus the differences, the economic differences, let me use big terminology, the socioeconomic divergence.
Whoa.
You have guys that are rich, they're wealthy beyond anybody's dreams. Several of these owners in this room are billionaires, not millionaires. And they've never wanted for anything in their lives. And then you have players who are largely... from not wealthy backgrounds that are making a ton of money for the NFL, who are upset because they feel like, and I think this is there's no delicate way to say that this is a black player versus a white owner issue.
Yes.
That you have guys like Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick who knelt down because they believed in social injustice. They believed that police were abusing black men across the country. Now, I don't necessarily like that this is an issue on any level. I wish that no man, black, white, Latino, Asian, whatever, I wish that no man was, you know, shot and killed unjustly by anybody, let alone the police.
Yeah.
But when you're a black man in this country and you have a problem with the police, Colin Kaepernick, the right thing to do is not to wear pig socks.
Yeah.
It's not right to put on a Fidel Castro t-shirt. That's the problem with Colin Kaepernick. I have no issue with them kneeling down. I have no issue because it's the First Amendment. It's their rights to do that. And I freely encourage people to exercise their First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
But what this meeting showed you were a couple of things. You have a group of black athletes largely, and there were several white players at the table as well, by the way, but you have a group of black athletes who feel that there is a large degree of injustice going on in the NFL. And you have a bunch of rich white owners who are absolutely 180 degrees opposed on the issue of Donald Trump's influence in the game. But here's the point. When you have a very important meeting like this, and you're sitting there talking about Donald Trump's influence on the game, there's no debate. He had a huge influence on this.
Yes.
Because, and I believe it was Bob Kraft who said he basically, Donald Trump lied to the American population, he lied to Americans, and he used Colin Kaepernick in this kneeling issue to vilify black players in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly with that. And the unpopular truth is that I think right now, Donald Trump, whether you love him or hate him, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, Donald Trump has an amazing amount of influence in the game. And I don't know how you quite explain that. You know, and I understand that certain people don't want to agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's hard to argue that Donald Trump is he the most powerful man in the world as the president of the United States?
Yeah.
Is he, though?
Yes.
Ugh, I think it's close.
Who's more powerful?
Don't mistake influential for powerful. Because I think we have...
When you say powerful, what do you mean exactly, I guess? Then, I mean...
Does Donald Trump have the ability to move people to act more than anybody else in the world? And I would tell you, no, I don't believe he does.
And I would agree with you on that. And I would say influential is the more accurate word to use then. Who is more influential, Donald Trump or LeBron James? Donald Trump or any other great athlete that you want to point to?
I think they're very close. The reason Donald Trump is influential, it's this Waffle House shooting.
Yeah.
So you have four African Americans murdered by a guy that's insane, essentially. A white guy who is naked other than a green jacket and an AR-15.
Oof.
Walks into a Waffle House, shoots four people, and then escapes, so they later capture him. Donald Trump has said nothing about this. He has tweeted nothing about this. And that's pissed a bunch of people off. When he talks about, like, anything, whether it's kneeling down in the NFL, in this case, DACA, healthcare, I mean, you name it. Donald Trump, when he talks about things, people listen. And they listen not because they agree with him. They listen because a lot of times it's sensational.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's inflammatory. A lot of times it is one of these things where Donald Trump, when he talks, people care what he has to say because they're like, well, what's next? What's he going to say next? Or that's the kind of thing that makes him influential. I don't believe it makes him powerful.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really fine line, first of all. Second of all, I think influential is all determined by what the topic is. So today's topic is, you know, essentially discrimination in a sense. Essentially, hey, Colin Kaepernick, you're...
How does Donald Trump impact you? Let me ask you just straight away, Jake. How does he impact you?
The only way Donald Trump impacts me is if we're watching the news and what he does in his day-to-day. He doesn't impact me personally. He doesn't... I mean, you don't think he has any impact on you personally? You could argue that the tax code or, you know, any number of policies that...
The budget, the wall.
Like, things like that.
Health insurance.
I mean, yeah,
job.
Sure.
Job. You're a millennial. Sure. You're 24 years old. Jobs. The economy matters to you. You may not realize it, but the economy matters to you. Immigration matters to you. Immigration reform matters to you. The idea that Donald Trump is keeping Colin Kaepernick out of the NFL, that's very real now. That's what I got out of this New York Times article to bring this all back around to the NFL and Donald Trump. I got out of this conversation that Donald Trump is keeping Colin Kaepernick out of the NFL because owners don't want to deal with the backlash of what Trump will say when Colin Kaepernick signs.
Well, there is that, yes. But I also think you have to consider the fact that before Donald Trump was a president, he was a businessman, a powerful businessman, influential businessman. And I think depending on, you know, the owner's prior relationship with him before he was president, you know, that may come into it as well. If they have business dealings, what's going to happen if they sign Colin Kaepernick and post Donald Trump presidency? You know, Donald Trump didn't appreciate that, so now he doesn't want to do that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's things like that where I just say, yeah, you know, maybe Donald Trump, you know, keeping Colin Kaepernick out of the NFL isn't such a farce anymore. Maybe it is actually real, and I'm starting to agree with you, but I think big picture-wise, it's fascinating to see, you know, the humble beginnings of the Colin Kaepernick saga and where we are today. I mean, it has just blown up isn't even the word I think,
but I will say this. I think he's close to signing with Seattle.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to work some things out, and I do think that Colin Kaepernick is very close to signing with the Seahawks. And I think that would change the game in the NFL, and I expect that to happen after the draft.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get a free look at him over the summer. If he goes in there and he's terrible, they're going to get a free look at him.
Yeah.
And I think he's earned that because he's worked hard. He's in great shape. And frankly, what has Colin Kaepernick done with his downtime? Well, one, he sued the NFL and he's deposed owners in the NFL, many owners in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's clearly been working out because Colin Kaepernick's in great shape.
Yeah. Well, he knows that. And this is something I actually really struggled with as this conversation has gone on. I think Colin Kaepernick has not done the best job putting himself out there that he's actually NFL ready.
He hasn't done the Manziel thing.
Yeah, he hasn't done the Manziel thing. I mean, he's put a couple of videos out following the Manziel thing, but I don't think he's done the best job, you know.
Like maybe he goes back to, you know.
Go back to anywhere.
NRI, you know, Nevada, Reno.
Yeah, and put out a tape of where you're at physically. You know, what can you do? I mean, it basically hold a pro day for yourself.
Yeah.
And tape it, you know, and you do that. And all of a sudden, wondering if you're in NFL shape is no longer an excuse.
But see, I don't think that's even a question. And this, again, this is why Donald Trump matters here. Because the question is not, is Colin Kaepernick in good shape? The question is, what will Donald Trump tweet when the Seahawks sign Colin Kaepernick? What will Donald Trump tweet if Colin Kaepernick kneels down on the Seahawks sideline?
But
which is, by the way, the reason the Seahawks have not signed him, because he won't commit to not kneeling. Eric Reid essentially has said, hey, I'm not going to kneel, but he's still not signed. Colin Kaepernick hasn't said, no, I won't kneel, which is why he is not signed already. And I think there's a crap ton of injustice in that.
But don't you think the positive comments after Kaepernick gets signed will counter Donald Trump's negative tweets on some level?
Oh, man, I don't know that they will. Because I'm telling the positivity of signing Colin Kaepernick, I'm not sure that will exist. I think there will be an avalanche of emotion, particularly from Black America, particularly from Black NFL players, from celebrities. I do think there will be some of that. But what if the Seahawks sign Colin Kaepernick and half the stadium's empty in protest week one? What if they boycott training camp practices because Kaepernick's on the team?
Fans?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess that would cost the team money for sure, and a lot of it.
Now, Seattle is a very progressive market. The people in of the Great Northwest, I think, would not have an issue with it. I really don't think they'd have an issue with it. It's why I'm surprised he didn't sign with Baltimore last year. Baltimore is a perfect fit for him. They were scared. They didn't want to get ripped by the president. And frankly, it's quite frustrating.
Why is that such a thing?
Steve Bisciotti, who's the owner of the Baltimore Ravens.
I just mean owners in general, but I know where you're going with
because
this.
I don't think it's all owners. I don't think it's all owners. Bob McNair is a heavy, heavy donor.
Yeah.
He is politically savvy. That's why he doesn't want to get ripped by Donald Trump. You know, I don't know. Go across the NFL. The Chicago Bears, the McCaskey family's never going to sign a guy like Colin Kaepernick. They're not going to put themselves out like that. That's not who the McCaskeys are. Can you see the Spanoses who completely effed San Diego? Can you see them signing Colin Kaepernick?
No.
Like, why have the Cleveland Browns not given Colin Kaepernick at least a workout? Why did the Redskins? Why have the... I mean, pick your team. that needs a quarterback. And there are teams that need quarterback. The Oakland Raiders need a number two quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I could go around this league and point to teams that need a number two quarterback. How many of them have actually called?
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't know. I think a lot of owners are scared of Donald Trump. Is that powerful? Nah, I think it's more influential than it is powerful. Because if you think you have power because you wield fear, you're not very powerful at all. So, now that I've dropped that amazing knowledge, I'll remind you to find us online, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Speaking of San Diego, I do want to talk about tanking in sports. Just in general, NFL, because I do think there's tanking in the NFL.
Yeah.
NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, you pick your poison. Mm-hmm. Is tanking good or bad for sports?
I would go out... it's so tough because I feel like, yes, it is, because then there's hype around the draft.
Good or bad?
I'm going to say it's bad. It's bad. It's bad.
Why is it bad for the Lakers to have tanked?
Because I just think that it doesn't bode well for the sport. It's saying it's encouraging losing, and I'm not a fan of that. I think tanking, there is a laundry list of reasons to tank, and there's a laundry list of reasons why it's good to tank for your organization. For me, yes. I hate incentivizing losing. Yeah. I hate that. I hate the idea of it. It is not how it should be, and I don't know how you change that.
But what does that mean, that's not how it should be?
Like, you shouldn't be encouraging the Lakers to tank, right? Like, you shouldn't be encouraging them to do that.
But I think it's good business for some teams.
It is good business, but that's not the question. The question is it good for sports? And I think that's a really tough question. I think it depends how your fans react.
I think, and this is the hard part, the New York Knicks, they're not tanking. They just suck. They're
out
terrible.
Loud.
They're terrible basket. It's a terrible basketball organization.
Yeah.
From Isaiah Thomas getting sued for sexual harassment to whatever you want to talk about. The New York Knicks are not tanking. They suck.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Yes.
The Lakers were tanking.
Yeah.
But they had to tank. When Kobe went downhill and you fire Mitch Kupchak, it was a changing of the guard.
But isn't tanking an art in a sense, right? Like, there's a specific way to tank. Because you can't tank unless you have the ability to be better than you are, right? So, like...
Sure.
The Knicks can't tank because they're terrible. They wouldn't have won those games anyway.
The problem is the Knicks, tanking in general is not a one-year process.
Yeah.
In baseball, it is a five-year process. In basketball, I think it's probably a two-year process. It is not one season, because what is tanking? If you look at the Chicago Cubs, the Cubs spent money and tried to win. And then hired Theo Epstein, who said, this is not how you don't buy championships. And this is the real critical conversation.
Yeah.
You can no longer buy championships. And there was an article today put out by Bleacher Report. And it was very critical of the San Diego Padres. And believe it or not, and what are we, 3 weeks into the Eric Hosmer era of the San Diego Padres. So... Bleacher Report thought that it would be the right thing to do to say, yeah, you know, it's been a complete failure for the San Diego Padres. It's been a complete failure to sign Eric Hosmer, and tanking didn't work. And I'm just like, really? Because the Padres are not tanking. The Padres this offseason had a prolific offseason.
Yeah.
And the thing that stands out to me is something that was said to me on Twitter today. Well, that's what people believe the culture of the San Diego Padres is. We're not trying to win games. Because what is tanking? Tanking is intentionally losing games for your long-term health so that you can rebuild your organization.
With draft picks.
The Florida Marlins, Derek Jeter, had a huge fight with Brian Gumbel on HBO, where he said, we take the field every single day trying to win. Well, you're trying to win with players who are probably AA, AAA players. Let's just be honest about it. call it what you want, that's tanking. Derek's going to be fine if they lose 100 games. That's what they're trying.
Mainly
they're trying to do.
Dismantled the entire roster. Yeah, and then, sent out all
hey man,
the talent.
That's what they're trying to do, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, you got it. You just got to own it, though.
But if you look at the San Diego Padres, are they're not tanking?
No,
it's just that they have been so bad for so long that people believe all they're ever doing is tanking.
Yeah.
But did you? Everybody talks about Eric Hosmer, the greatest, the largest contract in the history of the San Diego Padres, and it's amazing, and that's true. But has nobody seen Freddie Galvis was traded for in the offseason?
I think he largely flies under the radar for them.
Freddie Galvis was a great pickup, right? Like, so if you look at what they did this offseason, which is Freddie Galvis, Chase Headley, and Eric Hosmer. Right, that's what they did, and I'm totally fine with that. What is the problem with that? Because that's not tanking. So my struggle is, the Padres are doing it the right way, and they're still getting crushed for that.
Well, and I think it's important to say that in baseball, tanking looks a hell of a lot different than it does in the NFL or in the NBA, right? Like in the NBA, it's obvious who's tanking and who's not. In Major League Baseball, it's not obvious, right? Because I think tanking is not just missing shots intentionally or not, you know, like not playing star players.
Certainly
like,
not.
In
correct.
Major League
yes.
Baseball, I think it's, first of all, it's difficult to tank because you don't know. You can't go up there and tell a guy like Will Myers, oh, well, don't try to hit home runs or don't try to, you know, put up your annual numbers every year.
Yeah,
like,
let's have you walk a lot.
I'm going to need you to hit 250 instead of 280, and I'll expect that exact number at the end of the year. You can't do that.
No.
It's a science. It is saying, hey, okay, we've got Hosmer, Galvis, and Myers, and everybody else is essentially a prospect, right? So
yeah.
Knowing that, you know you're not going to be very good, and you accept that with the idea that you're going to get draft picks and you're going to develop your talent in the farm system. And by the way, nobody's talking about this except you. You know, they have one of the best farm systems in baseball.
The best. They have, by prospect quality,
yeah.
Or quality of prospect, the San Diego Padres have the number one organization in baseball.
And so I think when you listen to the media and you listen to the talking heads in San Diego, they're all going off win-loss record. And I'm just telling you right now, win-loss record is not reflective
it's
of where they're at.
It's almost meaningless for the Padres.
I don't care if they win or lose. I do care about guys like Tyson Ross throwing 126 pitches in 7 innings in hopes that he'll eventually get to the 9th inning for his no-hitter. I have a problem.
I don't. I could
do.
Care less about
I do
Tyson
because
Ross.
It's not that he's going to be there when you win, but he's there this season. And I think that matters, and he's one of the biggest names on the team.
Yeah, him and Clayton Richard are both 30 plus. I think Clayton's 34, and Tyson Ross is 31.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so you're 30 plus.
Yeah.
On this club, hey, please eat some innings for us. That's great because I need Joey Lucchese. I need him to get his run, and the other thing is people were ripping the Padres because they started Eric Lauer against Colorado last night in Colorado. And it's like, listen, they needed an arm, and he's the next prospect in line. I don't care if he's in a small park like Cincinnati, which is tiny. I don't care if he's in the thin air of Colorado. He's got to be down at the knees, and he's got to hit his spots. And yeah. He didn't, and he got hit for it. You know, so it's not as though the Padres made some major mistake with him, because they didn't.
Yeah.
He's the next guy in line. And I got to tell you, the wins and losses don't matter. What I want to see out of guys like Lucchese and what I want to see out of Brian Mitchell and Eric Lauer, who are three starters for the Padres, I want to see you execute your pitches. And I want to see your splits and your curveballs and your sliders. I want to see better spin rates, better location, lower your batting average on balls in play. That's what we're doing this year.
Yes.
That's what this
but
is about.
You just named off all those important stats, and you and I both know what those stats are.
Correct.
I don't think the common Major League Baseball fan understands the importance of those stats and understands why the thin air in Colorado is just another reason why you need to pitch down and down
correct.
And down. I don't think people understand that.
The air in Colorado, it's not, yes, the ball flies further. This is absolutely true because there's not as much resistance in thin air. But what what it does to pitchers is it messes with their movement. So if you are a guy and if you think about who's got a great, like Patrick Corbin, probably the best curveball pitcher in baseball who relies on a curveball, him or Kershaw. And it's probably right now, it's probably Corbin the way he's throwing it, right?
Sure.
His curveball is not going to curve as much. It's not going to be as sharp because there's not as much air grabbing the seams. His two-seamer's not going to run as much. It's going to be flat.
Yeah.
Your cutter's not going to cut as much.
So the effect on his pitches is not as drastic.
It's exactly right. It's a lot more hittable. Pitches are a lot more hittable in Colorado. You combine that with the thin air when you do hit it. That's why pitchers don't like going there, because their ball doesn't act the way that it acts in Chicago or in Southern California. Whereas, you know, like everybody was saying, well, Lauer should have pitched it at Petco Park. Well, I get that Petco Park is a huge barn. I understand that. But we weren't playing at Petco Park last night. We were at Coors Field. It is what it is. The kids got to execute.
Yeah.
All of that to say, how come as Padre fans or as Bleacher Report, how come you cannot look at the Chicago Cubs and realize, oh, the Padres are doing the exact same thing?
They're just 4 years behind.
And they're doing it better.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they're not buying pitching.
Yeah.
And the Cubs have bought their pitching. And why were they bad last year? Because their pitching was bad.
Well, and they're seeing it again this year.
Yeah, because Yu Darvish is a huge problem right now. By the way, I'm starting to buy into the trouble with your Giants.
Yeah.
Because that's starting to get a little scary now.
That was embarrassing today.
They got destroyed by Bryce. I mean the Nationals.
I mean Scherzer.
The Giants are not very good right now, and it's concerning. But I'm starting to see it.
Isn't it what you just said? I mean, it applies to pitching. It also applies to position players. You can't go out and buy talent and expect to be better or be really a contender or a really good
team.
But
if you're the Giants, you haven't bought talent as much as you have not gotten production out of the talent that you bought. And right now, like today, I think it was Samardzija.
Yeah, lit.
That was not a good start for Samardzija, who's a guy that you bought. He's not your guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's your best pitcher right now? Well, it's Johnny Cueto. Okay, he's the ace of your staff. Who's your second best pitcher right now? It's Chris Stratton.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that you developed. And that's why it is so freaking important that he is... You know, he develops. I look at guys like Jeff Samardzija, Derek Holland, even Johnny Cueto. Those are guys that you bought and paid for, and that's not great for you. But then again, if you look at Gregor Blanco, if you look at McCutcheon, Longoria, you know, those are guys you bought. But the core of this team are guys you develop. Pablo Sandoval, even though he won, left, and now has come back.
Yeah, that's one hell of a story.
Pablo's your guy, right?
Well, like, you look around the infield, those are all their guys.
Yeah, their bench is their guys. Joe Panik is their guy. Buster's their guy. Brandon Belt's their guy. Brandon Crawford's their guy. Mac Williamson's their guy. Like, they have a lot of their guys on the field. It's the guys they bought. And when you buy a lot of talent, hello, New York Yankees. When you buy a lot of talent, Giancarlo Stanton, and they don't perform, you struggle. That's what I'm talking about. Look at the Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox developed their talent, and their developed talent is really performing.
Yeah.
So you're winning. Anyway, here nor there. If you're the San Diego Padres, do what you're doing, and don't buy pitching. Develop pitching.
Yeah.
Draft pitching. You know, at that...
I think they're the team that's easy to hate on. And I think that's why you hear all the negative PR and you hear that, you know, Hosmer was a waste of money. He's not going to be a waste of money.
What a stupid thing to write. Especially now that he's on family leave or what. I think he's on family leave.
Yeah, whatever,
right now.
Whatever it may be. I mean, listen, the guy is going to be your cornerstone for the next, you know, 5 years, essentially. And at some point in those 5 years, and it's probably closer to the fourth and the fifth year, he's going to be really important for you because he knows how to win.
Yeah.
And the young guys don't know how to win yet, mainly because they haven't won at the highest level, which Hosmer's done.
Yeah, it's interesting. I love baseball. I would talk baseball every day.
I'm fascinated by the idea that baseball seems like rocket science to most sports fans.
Why is that?
I don't really understand it. You know, I really don't get it because it's not the it's not a complex game. Like
baseball's
really
not rocket science. Baseball's if everybody would look at baseball simply from the perspective of see ball, hit ball, throw ball, every team would win a World Series.
Yeah.
But we get into this, well, low hands position is and I get up to the plate and use that low hands position. and it's like, dude, shut up and hit the ball. You know, like, come on. Like, I could tell you, like, Brandon Belt's an interesting guy. And I loved every minute of covering the Giants. Like, I truly enjoyed covering that team. And Brandon Belt had struggles early in the 2012 season, I think it was. And one of the things he figured out he was doing, because he's a left-handed hitter and he holds his hands about shoulder high on the back, near his back shoulder. One of the things he was doing is he was turning his knuckles in on the bat. So he was tying himself up. And all he did was turn his hands and relax his hands. Guy becomes a 20 home run hitter and an 18 home run hitter and a 300 hitter. An average hitter goes to be a above average hitter.
Yeah.
And it's little minutia mind-bending stuff like that that just fascinates me.
Yeah.
It really does. Hey, before we get out of here today, I want to talk about shoes. Do you like Kanye West? Are you a Kanye West guy?
Not particularly. I mean, his shoes, everybody loves the Yeezys. I mean, it's a cool shoe, but...
But no, just him in general.
I don't really relate to the guy. I mean, what is he doing with his life? I mean, he's making music.
Well, he's married to Kim K.
Which I don't think that she's particularly, like, super hot or anything. I think she's very...
Wow.
Because I think she's very fake in a sense, dude. I mean, she's essentially built herself, right?
See, I'm 45, you're 25.
Yeah.
24, going on 25. I'm more into sophistication and mental aptitude of a chick.
Okay, well then Kim K is not your chick.
Yeah, like the thing that I just spent a week in Ireland with my wife, and we had such great conversations and naps. Holy cow, we took great
Napping
naps to get over the jet lag.
Oh my God.
Anyway, point is, we walked all over Dublin together. We walked 30 miles in 5 days.
Yeah.
Like we walked everywhere. And we enjoyed sipping Jameson Irish whiskey and we each picked out our favorite kind and bought a bottle together, and we watched Chelsea football. We had a great week in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we had great conversation because we're great friends. So I look at somebody like Kanye West, who is just an odd dude, and he's with Kim Kardashian, who's just an odd chick. And I'm like, what do those two sit around and talk about? Like, what is that? What is the Kim K. Kanye dinner table conversation? Is there one?
I don't think there is, dude. I really don't.
It's that's something that I think is incredibly weird. Like, what do you do if you are Kanye West? Do you even look forward to dinner? Like, are you like, man, I can't wait to get home and have dinner with Northwest?
Nope. I don't think so.
I don't think you do either.
I think he's a businessman at heart. I think the guy got his start and built a career on music, and now he's at that point in his life where he's doing what Jay-Z did essentially.
Yes, he's becoming a brand.
He's becoming a brand, and he's trying to turn his brand into lifetime money, which he probably already has, let's be honest, but he needs more money because why not?
Well, what I think is interesting, and this is just me, what I think is interesting is that he's tweeting about how he's the richest man in shoes. I'm like, really? You're the richest guy in shoes? No, I don't see how that's possible. Because I went back and I looked over the last couple of years, and Yeezys, which is his shoe with Adidas, is so expensive, and the releases are so limited. The releases are incredibly limited. You can't even get them most of the time. And if you want to buy Yeezys after the release, they're like $500. Who's paying that? Like, I'm not paying that. And so I go back, like, last year, 4 of the top 10 best-selling shoes in the world were Air Jordan Retros. Like, the 11 and 12 on their own? Dominated.
Dominant, dude.
Dominated.
For good reason.
And Adidas was there, but not with Yeezys, with their new casual lifestyle lines.
Yes.
They're NMDs and
you know that's called volume. That's
yeah.
called pricing it right and just selling a crap load of shoes.
Like Roush ones. I mean, just all the things essentially that I buy. I'm the sucker who keeps Nike at the top of the food chain.
As you should.
And it's like you're not Kanye, the wealthiest man in shoes. I'm sorry, dude. I get that you're pushing your brand, and I get that you're cool, and you're Kanye West, man. Yeah. Like next week, it's the fries. I get it, right?
Yeah.
Do you get that reference?
No.
Yeah. That's from Gold Digger. Next week is the fries.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Come on.
Dude, I didn't put it together. Sorry. I know that song.
You're wrecking. Man, that's my best material.
Sorry.
Jake.
Disappointing.
Jake, that's my best material.
I know.
Man. Anyway, point is, he said on Twitter today that he's the wealthiest man in shoes, making more money than Michael Jordan. I'm like, come on, dude.
Even if he were, I wouldn't really care that much,
come
honestly.
On. Speaking of $500 shoes.
Yeah.
What do you make of this LeVar Ball story today? I almost forgot about this.
It just continues the degenerate nature of LeVar Ball.
So LeVar Ball today pulled his sons, Cleangelo, Clamato, whatever the hell his name, Leangelo, and LaMelo Ball out of Lithuania.
And this pretty much has nothing to do with Leangelo.
No, Leangelo's the leading scorer.
Best
in
player
the,
on the li- team,
yeah,
essentially.
No, he's the leading scorer in the league, I believe, in Lithuania, because he shot the three ball really well. Like, he's developed nicely. LaMelo, who I think has the body of a 10-year-old teenage boy.
He does.
Shot 28% from the floor and played 12 minutes in Lithuanian league games. And so LeVar's like, I just don't like the coach. I love Lithuania. I like the league, but the coach is just not for me.
Doesn't play LaMelo because LaMelo can't hold his own.
Is this about you, LeVar? Like, that's the first thing I thought. Is this about you?
It is, because they do the big baller challenge tournaments.
Yeah.
Where LaMelo and LiAngelo play the entire game of every game in that tournament.
And they dominate, and those big baller tournaments are against, literally, I'm not making this up, they're against high school teams in Lithuania. Like, bad teams,
yeah.
Not good teams.
Yeah.
So, of course, LaMelo's going to dominate.
And to me, that just says LeVar's trying to make money.
Because LaMelo's a 16-year-old kid, so he can dominate 16-year-old kids. When he gets in a professional game against grown-ass men, he has trouble competing because physically he's undersized. So here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Now what? Because you're not good enough or mature enough to play in Spain, Italy, certainly can't play in Germany, Israel, can't play in Israel. Like, he could probably go to China. The Chinese league, he could probably play there as a bench player, and LeVar's not going to have any influence there. So what now? Because you're ineligible, so LaMelo's not going to college.
I mean, literally.
We already know LiAngelo's going to the D League or the NBA. He's going into the NBA draft, but he's going to wind up in the D League or the G League would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you're LaMelo, you just need to bide your time for 2 more years till you're 18, and then you need to, in that time, you need to put together a good enough scouting package to get into the NBA. I mean, that's like your whole life. It's your entire life.
He's got to play competitive. Do not do what Dante Exum did. Dante Exum pulled himself out of high school and didn't play college basketball so he could go to an academy and become a better athlete and basketball player. And it killed him because he didn't compete.
And he's just now
becoming a man.
Yeah.
He's just now putting some hair on his chest and drinking Schlitz and becoming a man.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's at this point, LaMelo doesn't even know what Keystone Light is.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not a man. And that's what I think so many people don't realize. And I'm hoping LeVar realizes that, although I am not confident at all in any way, shape, or form.
I think LeVar is just trying to make money. Honestly, I literally think that's all it's about.
It's got to be about more than that. This is your kid's life, dude. Like, come on. Is that what we're really talking about with LeVar Ball?
Well, why would he take him to Lithuania, dude? If it's about LaMelo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is a legitimate question. If he is concerned about, if he's putting LaMelo's life, and LiAngelo to a lesser extent, but this is really more about LaMelo.
LiAngelo's a man.
Yeah, like LiAngelo's
a 20-year-old man.
Like, LaMelo is at a point where he needs to just keep playing. Just That's keep it. Playing, dude. That's it. You'll be fine. And if it is, if for LeVar, if it's about LaMelo, yeah, he should go to the Chinese League. That's where I would go. And work your way into the starting rotation. You're going to be a nobody at first. You know, you have your brand, you have your name recognition, but you're not going to get significant minutes at first. You know, and LeVar just needs to hold his water long enough for LaMelo to turn into something.
Bro, I can't even make this up. Kanye West just tweeted a picture that says his, what time was this tweeted? An hour ago. My MAGA hat is signed.
Yeah,
his Make America Great hat.
Well, have you seen the Twitter saga with him and Kim K?
No.
Kim K made him.
Oh, yeah. Yes. She made him back away. Yeah.
And so that's why. But that's why I say, like, guys in who are influential and powerful want to hang out with other guys who are influential and powerful.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating with Kanye, the whole Kanye 2024 campaign that he's starting up that's essentially just kindling right now, but is going
to
be...
I'm not voting for Kanye West to be president.
I wouldn't vote for Kanye West either.
Stop it.
No way.
Stop it. No, there's no chance that I'm doing that.
No.
No chance. Anyway, all of this to say, LaVar Ball, I think, really damaged LaMelo by taking him out of high school and taking him to Lithuania. I think he really damaged him. And now you thought Lithuania was an odyssey. I think now the odyssey begins for LaMelo Ball. Because now we got to see what he's made of. And you know why I think he's doing this, by the way? Because I think he wants LiAngelo, LaMelo, and Lonzo to work out together this summer. Because they're doing... some accounts say that Lonzo Ball is doing intensive basketball training to build his body so that he's more durable for the Lakers next year.
Yeah.
Which I think is absolutely the right thing to do.
It is. It's one of the areas that he needs to improve on. He definitely needs to put on more muscle, and he definitely needs to make his body stronger.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see how all that works out.
Dude, and for his sake, and honestly for the Lakers' sake, since, I mean, you and I are both, Laker admirers, he needs to figure out how to shoot. Like, and if he's not going to change his form, which was reported. And so if that's the case, he's got to figure out how to shoot. I mean, you got to figure out how to shoot.
Yeah. By the way, one quick LeBron James note. They are up right now. It looks like that's 68-59 or whatever it is. LeBron James is 12 of 15 for 31 points.
Yeah.
The rest of the team is 12 of 37 with 35 points. That's not good.
No.
That's not good at all.
No.
You know, so I that's why I'm telling you, dude, I don't have any confidence at all. Yeah, it's 68-59 Cleveland. I don't have any confidence at all that they're going to the finals. I think they can beat Indiana.
You're having trouble with Indiana.
Yeah. I don't think there's any chance they're going to win on a big level. I really don't. Make sure you find us online, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Make sure you find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. Anywhere you get a podcast, just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And you'll find me and Jake, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.